Time to get started. Let me welcome you to the refurbished National Academies building and to the Board on Research Data and Information Symposium on Global Scientific Data Infrastructures. My name is Cliff Lynch. I'm the director of the Coalition for Networked Information, and I am one of the two co-chairs of the Board on Research Data and Information. Before going further, I'd like to introduce two other people. Fran Berman, sitting over there, who is my fellow co-chair of the board, and Paul Euler, the director of the board. We've put together what I think will be quite a interesting and thought-provoking symposium for you this afternoon, and I'm just going to say a couple of words of introduction and then get out of the way and get things started. There has been quite a lot of hard thinking going on over the past close to a year about infrastructure for global scientific data sharing, management, reuse. And we've been fortunate to have some very, very smart people, notably Alan Blatecki, the director of the NSF Office of Cyber Infrastructure, who you'll hear from shortly, and Chris Greer, who is well-known, I think, to many of you for his work at the National Science Foundation and then at the OSTP and most recently at NIST in various areas related to scientific data management and curation. They have been doing a good deal of thinking about organizations, priorities, opportunities, stakeholders in this area, and interestingly have, I believe, connected up with a whole series of similar explorations that have been taking place elsewhere around the globe. What we want to do today, and I think many of you have seen a white paper that they prepared some time ago for a sort of a straw man proposal for what they called the Data Web Forum that tried to elaborate on some of those ideas. What we want to do today, after laying out some of the sort of fundamental thinking and motivation and observations that have driven these proposals, is really two things. Our purpose is not to critique these proposals in any detail. It's really to provide some guidance and insight about where are short-term opportunities and deliverables for any kind of global scientific data management community organization that came into being that would facilitate interoperability, facilitate data sharing, and through this advance the progress of science. What are the, what if any, are the low-hanging fruits here? So we're going to take a look at that in the first panel, which Fran will chair after we hear from Alan. Then secondly, in a panel that I will chair, we will look at the question of stakeholder communities. There are a lot of stakeholder communities here, if anything, more than we know. We're constantly, you know, being reminded, I'm a stakeholder too here. So we're going to try and get some insight into the layout of the stakeholder communities, which are the most critical, and what are the right mechanisms that we might use to rapidly bring them into engagement with an effort like this. So those are the two sort of fundamental questions that we hope to explore here in the context of the development of global scientific data infrastructures. There will be, we hope, time for a few questions after each panel. There are microphones on the edges of the room, and we are making a recording of this, so it would be helpful if you used the microphones, and we'd be grateful if people would identify themselves when they do pose questions. We will be audio casting this, and we may get some questions in from network land. I don't know. We'll see. And we will be making that audio cast available on the board's website for future reference as well. I'll also just note that when we adjourn at 5:45, there will be a reception outside, and I hope that many of you will be able to stay and join us for that for a few minutes as well. So those are all of the things that I want to say by way of opening and context. I'm delighted that so many of you were able to join us here in person. I see Fran nodding, which suggests I probably haven't forgotten anything drastically important. So I think what I will do is turn the podium over to Alan Blatecki.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. A couple things I'd like to do. Chris is not going to be with me today. He's in an extended meeting in Charlottesville, actually. But so I will try to represent both of us. I want to talk about this issue about how do we share research data globally is sort of the issue. You've seen some of the stuff on DWF, and I also want to tell you don't. Focus too much on the word DWF. We're talking about changing the name, but anyway, the concept still remains the same. So let me, before I get into it, I do want to show this slide only because I get a little irritated when I talk to people about data, and they focus on one component of that. They say, well, I know what access is, I know what storage is, I know what tools are. The point is there are a lot of components to data, and if we want to be effective in sharing and using data, you have to address all those issues. Acquisition, storage, preservation, curation, all have to be done well. All the services and software. So I don't expect anybody to remember the slide other than to say that it's a complex set of issues. If we really want to have discovery and insight take place and reuse, all that has to be in place, and that goes back again and it becomes a virtuous circle, if you will, to provide the capabilities. So that's the environment, I think, that we need to think about when we talk about data. So with that in mind, I want to highlight this. This is a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but the issue is there's four threats, as I see it, to what we're looking at in terms of global and interoperability on data. The first one is somehow we don't understand the need and importance of data for really looking at next-generation science and research. I mean, it's an urgent requirement. That's how we're going to be doing the bulk of science, so we need to understand that and take some action from it. And the second threat is we often say, well, let's have more workshops, let's have more committees, let's have more reports. I mean, we do this all the time. More recommendations. I can tell you at NSF we have several dozen reports on these sort of issues. So that's a threat. That's not a solution. The third bullet there, waiting for this all-encompassing solution. I got the architecture now. Everybody adopt it. We're all set to go. We do that, we want the perfect thing. Well, that's not going to happen either. And the last one is we're waiting for standards to happen. Let's get the standard that everybody agrees to, and I would simply tell you that in any of those, the last two especially, none of us are going to live long enough to see that happen. Those aren't obvious solutions. So the question is, we need to say, all right, let's just, I'm going to suggest do it. What needs to be done? So the first issue here is saying, let's stop talking about data sharing and let's start actually doing it. And two components under here. The first one is to say, how do we identify science communities? How do we identify the folks that are already doing science exchange and exchanging data? Let's start identifying them as our base of users, if you will. And then let's start looking at chunking it. Let's not worry about having the perfect solution. Let's get a solution that works for maybe this tiny bit of data, but let's get agreement and make it work, and then do another one over here and start putting them together. That way we'll get some traction. The old walk before you can run metaphor. So what we're talking about is establishing an organization to make that happen, if you will. We're looking at international support, and I'll talk more about this in a second, from agencies to help support the activities. How do we involve working scientists? And then how do we really get this third bullet here, which is sustained effort to create a vibrant international data research community. That's really what we have at the end of the day. How do we make this sustainable and vibrant to get our work done? So we originally called this a data web forum, is the idea we had in mind. As you see, I'm now suggesting from the last working groups that Research Data Alliance may be a better word. We'll see what comes up with this. But anyway, the point is we've got three government agencies that have agreed already to start this activity. And I'll come back to that in a second. But we've got the European Commission has funded some folks in Europe to do it. Australia has joined us, and the U.S., both NIST and NSF, are working at providing some initial startup on this. We've made multiple awards to several. We use non-government structures because the Europeans don't understand non-government organizations, so we call them structures. But the point is it's universities or nonprofits who are involved. And have them, if you will, drive the effort. And that last bullet there really is sort of, at this point, the vision and goal of what we talked about. How do we facilitate the exchange and interoperability of data across disciplines and boundaries by producing high-quality documents, influence the way we store, use, and manage data? So that's sort of the high-level goal. That's what we're trying to do with this activity. So the structure we've talked about, and I've got a diagram in a second I'll show you. I'm trying to go quickly because I want to make sure we have time for discussion here because it's a whole new concept, if you will, an organization. What we're talking about is having a governance strategy to look at how do we deal with policy issues. This is everything for permission, directions, and so forth. How do we get participant focus on operations, services, and interoperability? How do we get the actual people doing the work in the organization to make this happen? Looking at agency focus, let me just come back to that in a second. Let me go to the fourth one there where I talk about working groups to focus on rough consensus and running code. For those of you familiar with the IETF, this is the Internet Exchange Task Force group, set up the standards for basically how we use the Internet today, and it still exists. And basically what they adopted was what they called a rough consensus and running code, and that is we don't want the perfect thing. We want something to work. So let's get this part and get agreement and go with it. And we'll fix things as we go along. And I'm going to suggest to you that's the approach we want to do on the data side when I talk about chunking. Let's pick things that work, get agreement, and get it going. So we want working groups then to be actually doing that. And I'll come back to on how we want to make that happen. Then you look at community-based approaches. Again, some communities are doing some of these things already. How do we leverage that? And then how do we begin to look at best practices? Because people are doing things, and I see an enormous amount of reinvention and duplication. How do we get away from that and say, let's, you know, this group is doing this. This is the, can we begin to say, hey, is there a way to start pulling these together? Last two bullets are all equally as critical. Timeliness is important. We need to be able to move quickly. And it's driven, again, by the research community, not the software community or another, but by the researchers themselves. So this is sort of the high-level view of the organization. There's a council which is providing, if you will, oversight and strategy for the entire activity. So that's going to be, we talk about some of what that's going to be involved with. There's a plenary group, which is actually, this is following sort of the IETF standard, where you get people together, and that's where the decisions are made. We accept that best practice, or we recommend this piece of code. You get agreement at that level to make it happen. The secretariat is where the working groups are. These are the people actually doing the work. So if a working group comes up with a recommendation, for example, of what they'd like to see happen, it goes to the plenary, and if it's approved, then it becomes an adopted approach. The NGSs across the green boxes there are the energy to make this happen. Let me talk a little more about that in a second. And I have government agencies at the bottom. One of the things that works so well for IETF is that industry provided the horsepower, if you will, for these folks to work together. So, for example, Cisco, Juniper, you name them, all said, all right, you know, Jane, Fred, whatever, your job is to work on IETF to make these things work. And so they provided the time and effort for these people to spend time at this. In the academic world, you don't have that flexibility. I don't know many of universities that can say, here, just go do this, we'll fund you to do that. That's just not an option. So what we're talking about here is having the government agencies, government agencies provide the resources to provide the people to make this happen. So, for example, in this case, then, we would fund the scientists and developers to get together to create the work itself. So that's sort of the model. I said what we've gotten so far is the EU, the Australia, and the U.S. have agreed to fund groups. We funded, let's see, I think maybe, oh, let me come back to that. We funded, I think there's probably 7 or 8 working groups that have been funded already, NGSs. Actually, Fran is in a group here in the U.S., so is Beth. There's a few folks here involved already. You're going to hear from Peter later. He's in another group over in Europe. So we've got some activities going on in those areas already of people to start to do this work. Some high-level principles. It's community-based. The point is it's not being driven by the funders. It's not being driven by some super agency. It's not a government agency. It's not a commercial entity. So it's community-based. The scientists and the users driving this. Meetings are public and open. The products, it's not proprietary. The point is a standard comes up, it's available to anybody who wants it. Best practices, that's part of the principle I said for working on an organization. Focus is on harmonization, early adoption. Again, how do we make these things work? Progress is through consensus, and so there's a lot of discussion at the working level on making this happen. I'll come back to that if we need to. Organization isn't going to sell, design, or say this is what you must do. Again, it's a voluntary organization where people contribute their time and effort. And the issue becomes, the last one is really important, how do you have a balanced representation of stakeholders and users? And that's part of the challenge that we've got going on. So where we stand today is that several teams have been established, and they are meeting every week, trying to flesh out that organization, ask and start addressing some of these questions. Who are stakeholders? What are the working groups? What's the model going to look like? The first informal meeting of this group is going to happen next month, October 2nd and 3rd, when we start getting more detail and discussion. In fact, the charge that we've given to the NGSs is come up with the agenda for that day and a half workshop. What we're going to do, how we're going to do it, and so forth. And we're shooting then for a first meeting of the Research Alliance. Official meeting is going to be in Europe in March of 2013. So that's a very quick overview of what we're trying to do. We're getting a tremendous amount of interest in it. One of the issues we have to address is we've got multiple other government agencies that already come and say, how can we play? And so I'll be upfront with you, a little cautious because we need to get organized. Can't grow too fast. How do we manage the process? But what I'd like to do is stop here. I said we've got several folks in the NGS community here that have been involved with this that can answer specific questions about where they are. As I said, Fran is providing leadership for the U.S. Peter is doing the same thing in Europe, and he's on the agenda later. So with that, let me stop and see if there's any questions or comments you might have. I know I dumped a lot quickly, but...
I actually just received one from somebody who had emailed me prior, and he's the one who received most of them, but Stephen Browdy,
president of OMS Tech, asks, is there a defined relationship between DataWeb Forum, EarthCube, and the NSF Cyber Infrastructure Initiative, or is the strategy to just throw a bunch of darts and see what sticks?
Let's see. Yes, no, maybe. No. There is a strategy behind this. And in fact, some of the stuff in that EarthCube is clearly going to fall into some early practices and ways of doing this. The cyber infrastructure stuff work we're doing at the NSF is clearly aligned with this, exactly the same sort of thing. I think the last question, though, about just throwing stuff up with sticks, I'm a little nervous about that because that's a little more chaotic than I think we want. But on the other hand, the issue is you want to get things out there that people are using and working on. And once that's identified, I think you'll find people begin to coalesce to some of that. So that's part of it. How do you make lots of things happen and pull them together? One of the issues that we see often is that you're not sure what else is even out there, who to even to talk to. And so simply having a focus for these activities could be important. And that's another thing we're trying to do here. So, again, the message was, you know, let's just start doing it and let's work our way through these issues because we've had lots of discussions and, you know, we need to move on. Wow. Okay. Oh.
Government, the issues you're dealing with are ones that we've had on for a long time. I mean, what stopped previous efforts to make this work? What have been the biggest barriers, and what can we where can we learn lessons from failed efforts of the past?
Well, I think you know there are other groups doing things. I think part of the issue here is trying to. I think it's critical is we're starting to chunk things. Let's look at very specific things we can actually do. So, for example, one of the challenges is can we identify something in literally a few months that people can begin to use in various parts? And so I think one of the issues is can you have that sort of activity? The other area is how do you look at long-term sustained funding? And so, for example, with the government agencies, I mean, we've asked each agency to come up and contribute a significant amount of money to this for 3 to 5 years, and we'll see where it goes beyond that. But the point is it's got to be a long-term effort. We've never had a sustained effort. We keep doing these in increments and starting over. NSF, as you know, provides lots of grants, but they're always typically 3 years, and then, okay, what do you do then? Well, you rewrite it or try something new and do something again. I mean, we haven't looked at a sustained effort. So I think those are two things. I think the other thing that's going to make a difference, though, and I see this at NSF quite a bit, is there's a little bit of a fear that we're being buried by data and we're not finding any way out of it. And the point is we've got to start thinking about that in a serious way from through the entire stack I talked about. And so fear is often a good motivator. So I think that's another thing. People say we really need to start doing something. We can't afford to keep as we are. And I would tell you, for example, scientists are worried about data being lost because we're generating so much data. In fact, one of the issues is we cannot store everything we're getting, so we have to start making decisions about, we just can't keep it all. Well, what basis do you make those calls? How do you begin to look at the policy issues here? I mean, so I think that's going to help drive some of that, Michael. I think the time is about right. There's enough energy here, and if we begin to solve some of the issues of getting enough horsepower to work on it, I think that'll help too. Why don't you start your up there?
Yeah. Okay. Hi. My name's John Gardiner. I have a contextual question, global socio-political stuff. I'm an independent affiliated scientist with the AAAS Coalition on Science and Human Rights. One of the major focuses of that coalition is the Article 15 of the Human Rights Convention on Socioeconomic and Political Issues, which is concerned about adequate access to the benefits of science globally, including among those countries who do not have the resources, education, or whatever, to contribute to it. And certainly this is a somewhat remote, perhaps, purposive, contextual issue, but I'm just wondering to what extent the global infrastructure is conscious of that sort of goal.
I'll give you two answers to that. I would suggest to you, well, first of all, very much aware of it, okay? The second point I would make is I don't know if this group is familiar with the, Global Resource Consortium. Anyway, it's our director, Suber, pulled together 57 countries in June to talk about merit review as a way to look at evaluating science. And so we had 57 countries that NSF talking about it, tremendous interest and excitement. And they were so interested in this, they're going to have another one in next May in Berlin, and at which point they expect to have almost 100 countries there. And this sounds like a long story, but the point is, at that meeting, the issue is open access. directly to your point, because every country said this is something we need to address. So in May, you're going to have 100 countries addressing this issue, so it'll help drive it, and we're clearly aware of those sort of things.
Yes, Randy Shostak, reporter with EOS, newspaper of the American Geophysical Union. I was just wondering if you could provide some more context and details about the commitments that have been made by the three governments, the U.S., EU, and Australia, and are there other governments coming on board or who you anticipate?
Well, the last one's easier. Yes, there are other governments that want to come on board, and we've basically said, let us get started. You know, so we expect several more next year. So that's the first good. At this point, I'd have to add up the numbers, but basically we're probably talking about on the order of probably $3 or $4 million right now from the various governments to start this activity. Basically, we haven't come up with a hard limit, but we're basically saying, again, a 3-year commitment at least. And in that, we're saying one of the keys here is we don't want to fund, 10 people at 5%. One person at 50 is better. Because the point is you want people involved in this who, while they have a day job, this is also maybe their second day job. So there's continuity and ongoing activity. So we're looking at fewer people, but focused to provide, again, the horsepower and the energy to help drive this. I think you have to use the microphone.
The heliophysics community has been doing what you describe for about a decade now. Mm-hmm. All of the international space missions that look at the heliosphere have all made their data available mm-hmm. in near real time for about a decade now. There's a bunch of tools called SolarSoft that are based on a language called IDL, and the software is generated by the community, it's vetted by a team, and then made available to the community all the time. There's no very complicated infrastructure that manages it. Topical meetings are held periodically that people agree on things that are useful to be done. But generally, this has worked. And all the data is available. There are a bunch of very nice tools available. And it's all been pretty much funded by either grants or contracts from NASA or NSF to build various pieces.
Well, I guess my response to you is that's the sort of thing we want to take advantage of. And because one of the issues here is we also want to make sure it's multidisciplinary. And typically a lot of the things we see out there aren't so much multidisciplinary. But how do we take advantage of that sort of thing and put it over into the geosciences or over into biology? And how do we do it in the social sciences? And trying to pull those together so we really look at interoperability across the whole spectrum of data.
Well, I could give you some things that we've done. Mostly they've come not from the top, but from the bottom. Mm-hmm. For example, both the Japanese and ESA were not terribly excited about making their data available because large investments are made in building a spacecraft and the support structure for a spacecraft. But after a couple of years, community convinced itself that there was more gain mm-hmm. to the community for having all the data than just having the data reside in one national group. So the national groups themselves said, what we want to do is make our data available, and the result of that will be that our scientists will gain more from this than they would if the data that our particular set of instruments gathered was ours alone.
Yeah. And as I said, we're seeing that more and more, and the issue is how do we leverage some of those great examples and working code best practices and say, okay, can we begin to share that, get other people to adopt it? So those are good examples of the sort of things we're looking at and for.
Joe Urclay with the Solar Data Analysis Center. As one of the people who can actually publish to SolarSoft, it's not all vetted. And they're also, although the system is great, it distributes a lot of software that otherwise would not have gotten distributed. It has its problems, and as someone who's a programmer actually has worked with the system, versioning, if someone pushes a new change, suddenly something breaks, who knows what it broke. You know, there is a lot of room for improvement. Another problem is when you start talking about accessibility to the world, because so much of it is built around IDL, you need a $1,000 license to be able to use it. And so it helps our community. It could be better.
I'm cognizant of time. I know the next panel will start at 3:40, so I don't know if you want to take another question or move on. One more question, okay.
My name is John Rumble. I've been involved in data for a number of years. I'm very curious what the problem is that you're really addressing, because I'm very familiar with the activities in most research areas, and where there's a business case, and I don't mean necessarily money, but a business case in terms of helping science improve itself, there are a lot of large-scale data activities that are going on that are doing exactly what is being described, and what we heard for the helioscience is one example, but there are probably 20, 25 similar examples across all areas of science. And I'm not sure what the goal of this activity is in terms of complementing these activities or making those activities even more successful.
Well, I think the word is indeed complementing, but I would suggest to you one of the issues that is exactly that there's probably more than 25, there's probably several hundred solutions. And can we begin to get much more common approaches so they actually interoperate better between domains and disciplines and across boundaries? And some, when we look at the geosciences or biosciences, actually any of them, we see a lot of even incompatibility between the same sciences on the same data capabilities. So how do we begin to address some of those issues? If you want to actually, common metadata standards, for example, so you can begin to track things across discipline to discipline. I mean, there's lots of areas that need to addressing. So that's part of the stuff we're trying to address. We're not trying to say, let's reinvent everything, because there's a lot of stuff that is working, but there's lots of things that aren't, and can we help make that happen? Okay? All right.